Well, Halloween is upon us soon, and perhaps your car is making some spooky noises. If your vehicle is haunted or you suspect that, Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive is here to help with your exorcism or at least some repair advice on the squeaky wheel. Good morning, Zach.
Hey, good morning, Milt. Thanks.
We have a couple of questions that we thought about ahead of time. We're seeing people towing all kinds of things today, from tiny houses to tiny trailers. And there's recommendations on towing weights for, I guess, all vehicles. Is that number something that people should push as a limit, or do they need to stay well underneath those recommendations?
Well, that's a great question. I would recommend that you stay well underneath those recommendations. One thing to consider, though, before you completely answer that question is how often are you going to be towing the load? You know, if it's one time, that's different than if you're going to be regularly towing, and also the terrain. So if you're towing a teardrop trailer that's approaching your towing capacity and it's in Nebraska or Iowa, that's very different than towing that same trailer through mountainous regions and pulling that trailer up a steep grade. And then the other side of that grade, coming down the other side, you know, what's that going to do to your brakes, and how hard and how much heat is that going to generate on your brakes? And so there's a lot of things to consider when trying to determine, you know, how far to try and push your car. But the general rule of thumb, I just don't tow things with cars. I see a lot of people towing things with Subarus around here. And like I said, you can do it. It's just it's going to create a lot more strain on your car, which is going to require you to kind of baby your car a little bit more, a little more maintenance.
Yeah, if you're tackling the I-5 Summit every day, maybe that's a bad idea to be hauling something with your Prius up over the top.
Exactly, yeah.
The other thing we wanted to talk about before we get some calls from folks this morning is alignment on a car. You start to notice a little bit of shaking in there or whatever the issue is. Is that something you should tackle pretty quick? Maybe I've been guilty of this in my life where I've driven with bad alignment for quite a while. What's the rule of thumb there?
Well, like with anything else on your car, the longer you wait when there's an issue, the more it's probably going to cost you later. And so because so many parts of the car work synergistically, that you ignore one symptom and that symptom could then cause a second symptom to occur, which is generally a second problem. So the more problems you have with your car, the more things are going to need to be repaired, and that translates to the more money. So again, with all-wheel drive cars such as the Subarus and a lot of the Lexus SUVs that I see, and a lot of car manufacturers are making an all-wheel drive option now. If you are out of alignment, if the four wheels are not in alignment, what's going to happen, and it can happen very quickly, is you can develop an irregular wear pattern on your tires. Maybe just one tire, depending on which wheel is out of alignment. But in the all-wheel drive application, you have to replace all four tires when you wear one irregularly. And that's because of the transfer case or the center differential in the all-wheel drive setup is not made for one wheel to rotate at a different speed constantly than the other three. And so you can cause, again, significantly more damage by not addressing that issue right away. And it's just a chain reaction. You know, first you're out of alignment, then your tires are worn out, you don't replace your tires, then you ruin the center differential, and now all of a sudden you're up to $5,000 in repairs because you ignored that $120 alignment.
You better have a bus pass in your back pocket, right? Well, let me ask before have some people to call in with their questions about their problems, their automotive problems. If you have a question for Zach, you can give us a call at 800-838-3760. Or, of course, you can always email us at jx@jeffnet.org. So I'll throw out my car since I have you here.
Sure.
I drive an old land yacht, a 2000 Buick Park Avenue.
Okay.
Big boy. And for quite a while, I've had it for a couple of years, and for quite a while I get this service stability system light that comes on the dashboard. And just like the person ignoring their alignment, the car handles fine. I haven't had any problems. It's great. I did the dangerous thing like medical students do. I went on Google to try to figure it out, and I got some advice that maybe it's a light, you know, or a sensor underneath the steering column. And I saw just horrific repair prices for something that had nothing to really do with the alignment, or I mean with steering the car. What would you recommend? Do I need to get that checked out? Am I playing with fire?
Yep. Definitely need to get it checked out. Where that's going to come into play is when you really need it. So on a slippery day, you know, like today or Saturday night, we had our first rain in quite some time. And so there's tons of oil all over the road from various leaking cars. And all that oil is now soaked with water for the first time in a long time. And it makes the roads very slick. And if you were to all of a sudden require some sort of sudden maneuver, whether it's a slamming on the brakes and turning your wheel sharply to the left to maybe avoid a collision, where stability control systems come into play is in that moment of sudden need and urgency, and it's not going to work properly in that moment. And so for you during regular driving, you don't notice anything because everything seems to work fine because that system isn't really active. It just lingers waiting for the moment of need. And so when that moment of need comes, it likely won't be able to help you in the way that it was designed.
I guess driving a car that size, I just assume that everybody's trying to get out of my way. Maybe that's not a good philosophy.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned with the change of seasons, that kind of sparks an idea. Should we be doing something different? Is this a time of year to get prepped for winter, to get things checked out? What are some things we should look at with, as you say, the rain and potentially down the road some snow?
Yeah, I can tell you what I'm thinking about right now is I'm looking at the tires on my car and wondering if they're equipped to handle the entire winter season. And I can tell you they're not. So I'm going to need some tires soon. I'm looking at my wipers, wondering if they're going to work for the entire season or not. I try to not push. If my wipers are marginal right now, I just go ahead and replace them. Oftentimes, wipers only last one season around here because it's so hot in the summertime. Mm. So I try to not replace my wipers in March or April. I try and do it in September or October. And I try and think about the trips I might have coming up and, you know, is my car going to be ready or is there anything that I was thinking about in the spring that I put off 6 months? So those are some of the things. And I wanted to go back to the towing. When we were talking about the towing, there's some maintenance I was suggesting that a customer or, sorry, I'm thinking of being a business owner right now, some maintenance that a driver would want to do if you do tow with your car. And one of the major things you could do is keep a real close eye on your transmission fluid. The transmission fluid, it's an oil, and it gets overheated a lot more easily when you're towing a heavy load. And so the manufacturer, say Toyota, is going to recommend that fluid be changed at a certain interval. But if you're regularly towing, that interval is going to decrease. So instead of, say, 30,000 miles, you might want to change your transmission fluid at 15 or 20. And the other thing you can do is you could have a auxiliary transmission cooler installed, which is going to help keep that transmission oil cooler while you're towing. And that's going to extend the life of the fluid, which extends the life of the transmission. So that's a really good because there are so many people out there towing, like you mentioned, that's a really good tip for anybody doing that because it really does pay for itself in the long run.
When you pull into one of these facilities that specializes in an oil change, and I assume that they have the schedule from the manufacturer for a transmission fluid change as well, you could just tell them, you know, look, I do a lot of towing. Go ahead and change that. Is that something you'd recommend?
Yeah. And the other thing I had kind of notated to talk about today was a lot of people with these trailers seem to forget about the wheels on the trailer. And the wheels on the trailer need to be serviced from time to time, too. There's a bearing in each wheel that need some service every few years or every so often, depending again how much that trailer is in service. But I know most tire shops like Les Schwab will service trailer tires and wheels, and you don't want to just kind of hook that trailer up and take off. You want to make sure that the tires on the trailer aren't, you know, the usable life of tires now is 6 or 7 years, which seems really short. And when you have a trailer that sits around a lot, I can imagine it could be even less if the trailer is sitting out in the sun. So you want to look at those tires. And if you've got cracking on your sidewalls, that's an alarm. You should maybe get those tires replaced. And then, you know, every 5 years or so, take it in and just make sure that the bearings are tight and they've been serviced, whether they need to be repacked with grease or replaced. Just being aware that trailer is, you know, a little bit of a liability back there, and you want to make sure it's in tip-top shape.
Right. If you're only using it a couple times a year, then you probably aren't even thinking about that sometimes.
Yeah, and now that I mention it, I know that, you know, I was talking to my friend the other day, and was talking about her trailer tires, and after we had the conversation, she kept noticing all these trailers on the side of the road missing a tire. And it's because it's very, very common for a wheel on a trailer to just seize up because the bearing, you know, it's either there's no grease in it or the bearing is starting to fail and eventually generates so much heat that it just stops moving. And then the car is just dragging a frozen tire down the road. And then, of course, the rubber comes apart or catches on fire, which is how I believe the car fire in Northern California started, if I recall correctly, by a tire that had come apart and the car was still driving, which started throwing sparks, and the sparks started the fire. So, again, you can see how just one little thing can make a chain reaction and turn into a real mess.
And don't let your chains drag either, right?
Yeah.
When you're driving down the road.
Exactly.
Are tires on recreational vehicles, well, trailers specifically, do they tend to be cheaper in their construction than you would see in like an automotive tire, or no?
No, they have to meet specifications, and so mainly the load capacity. And so depending on the weight of the trailer, the tire that's going to go on that wheel is going to have to meet that specification. And then, of course, there's varying grades of quality that you can select as a consumer. You know, there's a cheap tire probably, but it still is going to need to meet that weight requirement. And a professional tire shop is not going to install a tire that doesn't meet that weight requirement because obviously there's a lot of liability there. So, but generally the consumer is going to get a couple options as far as price. But yeah, it's, you know, the age of rubber being only 6 or 7 years, the usable life of rubber now it's a tough one because I have an old Volkswagen van that sits in my garage and I bought tires for it 5 or 6 years ago, and they probably have 50 miles on them, and they're probably bad, even though they're brand new, according to the information I just put out there. So it's kind of a tough one to swallow when you have a trailer or an RV or something that sits around. So, yeah.
If you own an old Volkswagen van, it probably pays to be a mechanic.
Well, the thing
is, former van owner myself.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't ever drive it anymore because I'm aware of the safety hazards of driving that thing. I've become accustomed to driving a nicer car that goes faster and has cruise control and air conditioning, and I can, you know, make phone calls in there. On the driving an old Volkswagen van, I mean, you've got to be at 10 and 2 and on high alert for anything to happen at any point in time. And it's exhausting to just drive an hour and a half in that car.
And in the winter, the heat trying to work its way forward instead of back.
No defrost, and the wipers go so slow that they can't even get out of their own way.
We're speaking with Zach Edwards this morning from Ashland Automotive on our monthly segment, The Squeaky Wheel. If you have a question about your squeaky wheel, give us a call this morning. We hope to answer your car problems. You can call us at 800-838-3760, or you can always send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Keeping fluids up in a vehicle, that's something that people also tend to forget about sometimes, especially if they don't go to a place that services on a regular basis. Do you see that a lot?
We do, yeah. And ironically, those drivers are the hardest for us to make happy because when the fluids have been neglected, as I mentioned earlier, it affects so many other systems in the car. And so when the fluids are neglected and a customer comes in, we have to break this terrible news to them that there's likely other problems happening or these other problems could likely result in the near future. And that's, we don't like to have to tell people bad information like that. So it's just tough to be in the business sometimes. And yeah, fluids are one of those things that it does cost money to keep your fluids up, and it does save you a lot of money if you do that. But owning cars is so expensive. It's understandable why a lot of people have to put off changing fluids. But it does cost a lot more in the end if you do that.
In the old days, it was always change your oil every 3,000 miles. And if you go to one of these oil change places, they still recommend every 3,000 miles. But if you turn to the back of the owner's manual, especially on newer vehicles, it may say a different interval, 5,000 miles or something. Is there a rule of thumb for that? Follow the manufacturer's recommendations, or are you better off maybe every 3,000 miles?
Well, it depends on the type of driving you do. If you do mostly in-town driving, say you're a realtor and you're just driving constantly, but it's all around the valley in town, I would do that oil change much more regularly than every, say, 7,500 miles, which is a pretty common interval nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
If the interval is 7,500 and you're doing a lot of in-town driving and it's a relatively new car, I would probably do every 5,000 miles. If you're talking about an old car like your Buick, I would probably do every 3,000 miles just because you want to keep a closer eye on a car of that higher mileage and that age. And so one of the disadvantages of these longer intervals is that nobody's popping that hood for 7,000 to 10,000 miles. Mm-hmm. And because customers generally aren't popping their hood in their garage and saying, hey, I think I'll check my oil today just because. So the advantage of, an oil change at a shop with certified technicians is that not only are you getting your oil changed at your regular shop, but you're getting that inspection from certified technicians. And there's a lot of value there. And generally, you're not paying for that quick once over. You're just getting your oil changed. And the quick once over is just a great added value. So that's stuff to consider when thinking about the frequency of changing your oil.
We have a call here from Gail in Eugene. Go ahead, Gail. Gail, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a 2001 Chrysler Town and Country van that comes with plastic headlights, and it's almost impossible to keep those bright enough for good vision at night. And I was wondering if there's a glass replacement available in the marketplace.
Hey, hi, Gail. Yeah, there's a couple things you can do. You can, if the gunk has just recently built up on the headlight, which is really oxidation of the plastic, I think, if that has just recently started, you can buy your own kit at the part store and kind of clean it up yourself. But oftentimes, if it's been building for maybe a couple of seasons, there's a service that most professional shops will do where they actually buff off a layer of the plastic and then smooth it and polish it, and it'll clean those up looking brand new again. Or you can just replace the headlights and there are headlights available in the aftermarket that are much more affordable than the ones available at the dealership. Now, the one caveat there is that you want to make sure and buy DOT-approved headlamps. And so when you're, and like I said, any professional shop is going to put DOT-approved lamps in for you because there's a liability if you don't. But so there are some options for you. And that's a really common thing with these plastic headlamps. I mean, I deal with it on all my cars. It makes it very tough to see. And then I guess the last option is, You could put in a brighter headlamp bulb once you get the lenses cleared up. But our experience is those brighter headlamp bulbs burn out prematurely, and we've just not had any success trying to put in a bulb that has a brighter capacity than the factory installed bulb. So those are some options.
All right. Thanks for your call, Gail. As people are preparing with this and trying to do their own work, sometimes folks will get online, of course, and order parts, and maybe you can get them cheaper online than you could locally. Always support your local business if you can. But you mentioned that DOT approval. Is that something that is commonly stated on websites when you order parts, or is there some shady websites out there that are selling non-DOT products? Is that something to be concerned about?
Yeah, that's definitely happening. And I can tell you that the manufacturers of those parts are, if they are DOT approved, they're going to say it. They're going to boast about it because that's something that's added to their cost of production. And so they know that's you know, added value for their product. And if it's not a DOT approved lamp, then they're not going to say, I mean, it might say somewhere, but it might not be as obvious as the product that is DOT approved. And so lamps and glass, any glass type of products are going to need to be approved like that.
Do you recommend that people learn to do some of the simple type things on their own cars? Obviously, if you need an engine rebuilt or something, you may need to go to a professional unless you have some kind of background. What kind of simple things can people do?
You know, that's an awesome question, and I think about that question a lot, and I think that my answer is no, you don't need to learn how to do anything, you know. Checking your oil is even really difficult, but what I do recommend is that people understand the basic fluids in their car, what they do, and that people understand the process of getting service for their vehicle. So I recommend people know what to expect when they come into a shop. They know how to select the shop of their choice. They know what questions to ask so that then the odds are in their favor of having a really good experience with their service provider because, you know, there's been so many negative experiences in the past for so many people that I just like to think that if people can educate themselves on how to shop and how to be consumers, that's going to probably
be better.
Yep, get them the most bang for the buck.
We've been speaking with Zach Edwards this morning.